This is Isaac from Trek 365. Just letting you guys know that I've never listened to Let's Trek Around and Find Out.
Welcome to Let's Talk About Treks, an episodic review of today's visions of the future featuring Earl Grey and Jack Dorino.
Welcome, everybody.
Hello.
My name is Earl Grey.
My name is Jack Dorino.
And we are Let's Talk About Treks.
Let's Talk About Treks is a podcast about a podcast.
Yes, we are. Yep. How low can we go?
I've always wanted to do a podcast about a podcast. Yes, anyway.
Today we'll be discussing Star Trek Con, Episode 1.
Okay.
Paradise.
Mm.
The release date was the 8th of September, 2025.
Indeed.
It is the first of two of Star Trek Con so far.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if it applies, but if it does, it is the 960th of all 961 episodes of Star Trek released so far.
I think that we should do some investigation into that and determine whether this is canon and then come back with that next episode, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, we can do that. Yeah. There have been several Star Trek podcasts. I just don't think they're included in the overall count of visual media, obviously, episodes, because we mentioned that the movies are included in this 900 count.
Also, Let's Talk About Treks is included, which is a Star Trek podcast.
Oh, I didn't know that.
This episode was written by Kirsten Beyer and David Mack, who's releasing another Star Trek novel next month. But this is written from a story by Nicholas Meyer, who was the individual who had been talking about doing a series around the Wrath of Khan era.
He was the director of the second Star Trek movie.
Yes, but, Wrath of Khan.
Yes.
This episode was directed by Fred Greenhalgh, or Greenhalgh. I'm not really sure, because in the word enough, G-H is, so could be Fred Greenhalgh.
Good questions. Mr. Greenhalgh, if you would like to come on and let us know how you pronounced your last name, we would very much like to speak with you.
You are welcome.
We would like validation.
Okay. It might be true.
I think the entire series was written by the same two people and directed by the same two people.
That would make the same sense. Person. It's likely a non-novelization broken up. It's not novelized. It's a dramatization.
Yes. Paradise takes place approximately 26 years after Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, as well as 3 months after the Enterprise B incident.
Indeed. Thank you for that context. I was wondering exactly where all this was placed. I'm glad that we have this to talk about because of, Strange New Worlds just ending. Now there's really no current Star Trek except for the Star Trek. So I do kind of hope that this is canon. Because if not, I'll be annoyed that we're discussing it now.
Well, we've discussed other things that are not canon, but we were kind of also annoyed at some of those other things, though, too. So.
No, thank you for sharing that.
This episode begins with Dr. Rosalyn Lear, who has commissioned a hearing from Starfleet, the Starfleet Civilian Resource Allocation Committee, to go to SETI Alpha 5.
I was surprised to have George Takei showing up as Sulu in this.
Yeah, it was an excellent get for this series to get Mr. Takei. And it was good to hear his voice. It was kind of jarring a little bit because he certainly sounds much, much older than Hikaru Sulu of this era.
I think he sounds about the same, but that's just me.
Okay. I mean, he sounds very, very similar. He's
just rough and gravelly.
Yeah. But as mentioned before, this scene takes place about 3 months after the death of Kirk.
Yeah, I was very surprised. Okay, so Dr. Lear? Dr. Lear sort of went in about Kirk, and maybe Kirk had intended to strand Khan on the planet, and Sulu got kind of offended.
Yeah.
And then in the next moment, he's like, oh, I'll take her. It just seemed like he did a 180 really quickly.
I think that the idea is he wants the opportunity. I don't know. He doesn't really want the opportunity to prove her wrong, but he maybe wants the opportunity to make sure that he can help her clear Kirk's name. in her mind?
Yeah, I mean, or just maybe to keep underscoring Kirk's innocence or Kirk's lack of ill intent in the matter.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting that throughout this entire episode, mm-hmm. they never mention the year that the Botany Bay launched, because originally it launched in 1996. But now because of Romulan timey-wimey shenanigans, we're not really sure if it really launched.
You know, the logs from that era are very unclear.
Yeah, absolutely.
But she drops... So there's a log from Marlon McGivers. So Marlon McGivers was apparently a lieutenant that was aboard the Enterprise that ended up leaving with Khan to go to study Alpha 5. And she's there... like recording her, like apparently this is like an OCD compulsion, like sort of sickness that's just passing up on Starfleet officers, because whenever they are anywhere, they have to record a log.
Oh, well, maybe. I think they've always kind of suggested that because of this lost era between 1966 and 2266, that nobody really wrote journals or logs or anything, so they're making sure that they keep track of their history.
Because, I like that idea, Earl Grey. You fixed the thing today.
But yeah, McGivers or MacGyvers is very much just in the episode. She was very much quickly infatuated with Khan for some reason, just maybe because he's a figure out of history. For a bad example, it would be like if Abraham Lincoln knocked on your door today and say, "Hey, would you like to just hang out?"
No. No, sir. No, sir. Don't you own slaves? No. No, sir.
Wow. I never thought about that perspective.
Yeah.
Were there slaves enslaved in the White House when...
I don't know.
Maybe he started paying them after the emancipation?
What now?
Well, could he... I mean, they could have started... paying them after June 16th?
I guess they could have. Yeah.
Or maybe they were paying them all along. I don't know. Oh, they were in the... Was that technically the South, D.C.?
If you had put slavery in Washington, D.C. and at the White House on a bingo card for today, I would not have checked it off thinking that that was going to be where we landed.
Well, I mean, I said it was a bad example. I was also just kind of an obvious one because he did appear in Star Trek, or a likeness of him.
Yes. Okay. I see your 6 degrees of separation. Very good. So MacGyver's plays this log where Khan is building a raft, I think.
Yeah, they're building a raft with a boy that was an augment that was a minor at the time of them evacuating Earth.
Right. I got a little bit of name confusion here because is there somebody named Joachim and someone named Joachim? I feel like maybe they're father and son, because I think the kid got like sort of roughed up by the other peers because he's a half human, half augment, and the rest of the kids are augments. So I think that his father Joachim is the augment and the kid is Joachim, and Joachim got beaten up or whatever. So then Khan came over and basically like benighted him with a sword.
My interpretation was
he says, "You'll be my champion."
Yes. Oh, yeah, absolutely. He kind of knighted him with the sword, and then he gave him the sword. But as far as the two different pronunciations of the name, it was just my interpretation that these different performers were pronouncing the same character's name differently.
Oh, Khan. I think Khan was saying both names, though, because he talked to both of them.
Oh.
He talked to the father, and then the guy got roughed. Oh, and then there was the other guy. Was his name Hugo, the one that was dissenting? They do a lot of working to sort of soften the idea of Khan in this episode. They do a lot of humanizing of this character. And one of the ways they do that is in showing him talk to one of his, I don't want to say counterparts, one of his peers, right? One of the augments that is around his age, and also has him ministering to the younger kid of that guy. And at one point, there's a little bit of dissent among the ranks. And the way that Khan handles it really came off as a lot more kind than you would expect from a con. One thing that he does is he says, he demands, you know, when he's defending the younger Joaquin from the Augment kids, he says that we're all going to be, you know, we're all the same here. And that surprised me, because I had always thought the idea of the Augments was that it sort of comes from the idea of eugenics, and there's a supremacy that's sort of baked in to that whole concept. So one would think that the leader of this group that was, you know, ruling Earth would have that as part of his makeup.
Especially based on, like, the Augments that we saw in, well, I saw in Star Trek Enterprise.
Okay.
You know, they're very aggressive. They're very assertive over each other. And they're very much, we are better than everybody else. In fact, I was making a good comparison, I thought, the other day.
Do tell.
When I was thinking about the X-Men.
Okay.
And how Professor Xavier says, we need to get along with the humans. And Magneto has always been pushing for this, like, homo superior kind of species.
Yes.
And that we are separate. We're better than them. We need to assert our dominance and rise up above them and rule over them. And Professor Xavier always has wanted, he doesn't quite subscribe to homo superior, but he also kind of says, hey, we need to work with these people that hate and fear us, though.
Yeah.
Do you see the connection I'm making with...
I do. I'm also thinking of... it sort of gives me the idea of... Do you remember Andromeda? Gene Roddenberry's Andromeda, where they had the Nietzscheans and the humans, and the Nietzscheans were... They were basically... They seemed to me very much like the Augments, as depicted in, like, Strange New Worlds and the rest of Star Trek. And I think that maybe that might be sort of a seed of the same concept. And those Nietzscheans were very much about, we are better than everyone else, you know. And in a sense, they were, like, they are, all of them, both of them, actually, the Augments and the Nietzscheans are actually right, in a sense. The X-Men, too, they are genetically better. I think that what humans, we as humans, tend to lean toward is what your heart and your intent is. And I think that sometimes things that are assets in the physical world can be a detriment to your inside, because they sort of, like, get hidden in the shadow of that.
Yeah.
And, like, your heart can wither and die, you know, underneath all of this greatness. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And, I mean, Dr. Lear kind of points out that, I mean, with a, I mean, it's a tale as old as time. It's even been brought up in
Beauty
Batman.
Beauty and the Beast.
Is that what you're talking about?
No.
Oh.
Well, I mean, I guess kind of, and maybe in a way.
Oh, yeah, I guess it kind of, yeah. Fair enough. Yeah.
So she brings up the idea that, kind of like the Joker brings up all the time in Batman, especially in The Killing Joke, that just a nudge in the right direction, the wrong events and the wrong, on just one bad day, could have made Batman the same as the Joker, or, you know, could have changed Joker's life forever and made him into Batman. She's kind of making the comparison of maybe just Khan is, I don't know, misunderstood. And there have been a lot of push towards these kind of stories recently. It's kind of a subgenre that seems to be kind of coming into its own right now. Disney did it with Mufasa and Maleficent.
Sure, where they have someone, a character who's been typically depicted as largely, like, 80% evil, and then they work towards, like, softening off another 40% of that. So then it's like, yeah, they're kind of bad, but I kind of understand why they were bad or where they're coming from.
I mean, Khan is dealing with starting a new society on a new planet for the first time.
Yeah.
And he's coming from a mindset of being pre-first contact. That's one thing that I think a lot of people forget is
What do you mean by that?
When Khan left Earth.
Is he from before?
Khan
from
left before Earth on a sleeper ship. Before, Earth met the Vulcans.
I didn't think about that.
They were even kind of touching on it when they were talking about the med lab, and they had MacGyver go and help. Oh, this is the modern technology that how you do this and stuff. These people are coming from what used to be 1996.
Okay.
And they're still stuck in an era where, well, not stuck, but they are.
They're from an era where they're not used to these things. Sure.
Yes.
So on the surprise number two for me was when Lear gets escorted from the Excelsior by Ensign Tuvok.
Yes.
Who, of course, was on the Excelsior at the time.
Yes.
I think that maybe during maybe a movie that at one point that maybe he had had some of that Kirkovian fluid for a little while. didn't we see a Tuvok with human ears for?
Yeah, we did. That's Star Trek VI. Tim Russ did play somebody on the bridge of the Enterprise or the Excelsior, and it turned out that it was Tuvok. Just somehow, did I just say Tuvok?
Yeah, Kirkovian fluid is my new headcanon. He had some of that, but he had to go on a mission to a place that only was used to human, only used to humans. But he had to use his Vulcanness, so he had some Kirkovian fluid. Went down there, you know. By now, they've sort of perfected how it works.
Okay. Yeah.
So on the on SETI Alpha 5, the logs sort of paint Khan's early struggle. Like I said, he has sort of a run-in with one of the dissenters, and instead of turning him away, he sort of brings him in close and gives him a job, and that job is to help build this Colosseum that Khan has envisioned his people building from the granite of the mountains, and they've found a place where there's an inland sea, so there's lots to, you know, irrigate crops with, and you know, drink, so you can live and breathe and bathe.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically like our modern Great Lakes. I mean, they call those a freshwater inland sea as well.
So this is like more of the softening of Khan. You know, like he's not building an empire. He's building a home.
Yeah,
sort of idea.
And this guy that is dissenting, he gives him a choice. He says, if you don't want to be a part of what I'm building here, can leave.
But you are
exiled and you can never come back.
Don't come back, Holmes.
Yeah.
But if you're going to stay, shut the fuck up. Do what I say.
Well, cooperate. You know, he wants people that are going to cooperate. He doesn't want to have, you know, division in his ranks.
Yeah, does that sound familiar?
Anyway, I think it does.
So you mentioned already the two. There were like the two augment women who were sort of working in the lab, and it turns out that when the augments were created, presumably by
non-augments, Sung,
he had that project called Khan. Right.
Yeah, right?
So
some of them.
Apparently, they decided to make the females selectively infertile, and that selection would be made by the humans, of course.
Well, it was my understanding that when they were born, they harvested their eggs, so that they were made infertile because all their eggs were gone.
Yeah, but then they could implant an egg if they wanted, right? Because there are some augment children on this planet, so they must have allowed them to have some children.
Yeah, there were some augment children on the planet. They were apparently just created in the last augment lab in Montana, of all places, which is an interesting connection to First Contact again.
It is. Where the Vulcans were, right?
Where the Vulcans landed.
Mm-hmm.
It's also interesting that there are some half... Well, you just mentioned...
There's at least one half human
kid. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so then meanwhile, so the Marla MacGyvers, MacGyvers?
They say MacGyvers, and that's how the way I remember it is I remember the show from the 1980s.
Okay, I feel like I've read it more frequently, so I've read it as MacGyvers, MacGyvers. So MacGyvers is, she wants to get, like, she's trying to live in this cargo pod.
Yeah.
Because people think that she's there to like be Khan's consort. So then when she meets the two women who are talking about the whole, you know, breeding issue among the augments, one of them tells her that she's meant to be there to be the broodmare in case they can't get their things working together. And do you think that that is true? What do you think about that?
Well, she, in Space Age, she very much fell in love with him. And Khan was almost like her Kirk
Okay. I'm not asking about her intentions. I'm asking about his intentions.
His intentions.
Yes. Do you think that he has an idea to...
Well, I think she was the wife that he mentioned that had died shortly after SETI Alpha 6 blew up.
Okay. And again, my question stands because you keep giving me information that has nothing to do with the question.
Well, why would he... If he called... They got married, apparently.
Not. I'm asking about his intentions in bringing her there. Do you think that his thought, that he had the thought of, well, if the thing they're working on doesn't work out, we can at least reproduce using her?
I'm having trouble distinguishing between this new canon that I've been presented with and what the intentions might have been back when Spacey came out.
Okay.
I think
so. You're saying that back when Space Seed came out, you're saying that you
the retcon. Yes, it probably was his intention.
Oh, with the new version. Okay.
Yeah.
So you think that in the Space Seed version, it wouldn't have crossed his mind?
It might have. I mean, he kind of had the hots for her too.
Okay.
Because
marriage at convenience.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did she... Do you remember the original Space Seed episode and how she ended up going with Khan?
I don't remember all the details, but basically she kind of helped him during his attempted takeover.
Mm-hmm.
And Kirk gave... Just like we just talked about, Kirk gave her a choice. You can stay with us and cooperate and live together in harmony and repent for your atone for your sins, or you can leave with them.
Oh, so he gave her the same choice that he gave the guy who was dissenting from him down on the planet.
Yeah,
so
Kirk gave MacGyver. Yeah.
Oh, so okay, so you're saying okay, so Khan. Oh, Kirk gave MacGyver's the same choice that Khan gave. Do you think that is meant to indicate that Khan learned something from Kirk?
Yes. Now that you've pointed that out, yes.
And maybe we'll see some other jewels of Kirk leadership spread throughout the story. And then, because that would make sense as to why he would feel so betrayed, when we see him later. But Marla gets caught with a communicator.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think she really has nefarious intentions, but I think that she does have an escape plan.
If it doesn't seem to be working out, she wants back out and just to face the music.
Yeah, like if it's really, really, really bad, get me out of here, please.
He starts wailing on her or something.
Again, we hear it. Let's Talk About Trucks does do not condone violence against women.
Mm-hmm. Well, absolutely not. Yeah. But in what they presented to us in the 1967 version of Khan, it seemed like, they were implying that he could be that kind of husband.
Okay. So this tale sort of wraps up with Lear at SETI Alpha 5 with Tuvok digging up MacGyver's tapes with Tuvok.
Yeah, MacGyver's and apparently somebody else, because she mentions that she didn't finish her work. Mm. And there is a big question of who made the other tapes.
I'm betting it's probably going to be Khan that made the rest of the tapes.
Yeah, that's my guess.
Yeah.
And maybe somehow that it's just... I'm wondering if we're going to find out that some of these stories are still kind of doctored as well.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
Like you know, somebody else is trying to make their own history as they see fit.
I hear what you're saying. I think this is just going to be straightforward history. I don't think that... I think it sounds a little more complicated than necessary. Okay. But we'll see what happens. Well, of course, in usual Star Trek fashion, we have to add a time limit so that, you know, time can be running out, because time is always running out on Star Trek. So we've been capped at 5 days, because that's as long as the Excelsior is willing to hang around.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know why she needs to stay there in order to catalog these tapes.
Well, she's gonna read them or whatever it is.
Well, but she can take them with her to read them or listen to them.
I suppose she could. That is a very good point.
However, maybe there could be a question of, are they contaminated did she, what did she do with them, what in transition to back to her lab or whatever? Or there's always the question of, could they be damaged on the way back? They are archaeological kind of artifacts.
Yeah. All right. So this, so the episode sort of ends with Marla's betrayal hanging in the air and then the time limit. So that's our dun, dun, dun.
Absolutely, yes.
So I really enjoy the idea of going back to this era. I also like podcasts. The only thing about it is that when you listen to it on a podcast player, you are forced to fast forward through commercials. When I watch it on YouTube, I have no commercials. I just don't really like to listen on YouTube with my phone. But that's the way. That's the only way I can do it without commercials.
I don't pay for YouTube, so I don't have no commercials. I kept on getting interrupted right when he's passing over the sword. Over to, how did you pronounce it?
Joaquin. I think one's Joaquin and one's Joaquin.
Joaquin?
I'm not really sure.
I'll have to listen more closely.
Yeah.
But this was an interesting opening episode. You know, I was guessing that maybe the splash image for that you're staring at the whole time on YouTube was going to be the representation of just this episode. Obviously, at some point, he has to discover the Seti eels because that's one of the only animals that survived the destruction of Seti Alpha 6.
Okay.
And the shifting in orbit of Seti Alpha 5.
Yeah. Do you think it's going to take us pretty much all the way up to the Star Trek 2?
Oh, I suppose.
Yeah, that's what I'm curious to hear.
Maybe a little bit past so that we can he's dead.
Yeah, I'm really curious to hear about sort of that story. I think that would be cool.
Yeah.
And I think it would be cool to tell it in this format. I think that maybe on a television format it might be for a lot of people too boring. I could watch the most boring Star Trek all day and be engaged, but I think as far as being able to like make money from it, as far as the studio is, I can see why a podcast might be a little better. And they've guaranteed money by making it so that apparently you either listen to commercials or pay for YouTube. So they've already really made their money on the product.
Yeah. Isn't there a pay version of Spotify that you can avoid commercials?
I'm unaware of this information.
Oh.
Hey, Isaac, maybe you could drop us a line. So if I were to rate a podcast on this podcast.
It's hard to rate a first episode.
It is. I feel like I want to say 7 for some reason.
Okay.
I don't really know why. There's nothing wrong with it at all.
Uh-huh.
It's a good entry to the story. It's cool setting up the characters.
Yeah.
And setting up the story. I think that there might be a story with this kid that he benighted.
Yeah.
And there's definitely going to be a story with Marla for sure. And I do think that since the tapes continue after her death, that we'll get all the way to her death.
Yeah.
And I'm very curious as to how much they built on this planet before the disaster struck.
Yeah.
And then how that sort of was and whether that was cataloged as well.
I'm sorry, really quick. Did you notice how it was implied that Ursula and Mata were together?
I didn't notice that implication.
Yeah. Several people mentioned, you know, Mata being your woman, and they were talking to Ursula, the medic person.
Oh, I thought they were saying that Marla McGivers was Khan's woman.
They were also saying that as well.
Okay. Catch that. Thanks for pointing that out. Earl Grey pointed out a thing.
So, I mean, I like the fact that they kind of allowed that to happen, because who knows how this society is going to turn out. Maybe there's a polygamous relationships.
Maybe it's just a big gay paradise.
There you go.
And then it got crashed by the other planet.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh my.
Space future fascism.
No.
Wait, gay space future fascism is what it is.
But if I were to rate this episode, it's the best episode of Khan so far.
Again, you're providing unrelated information. typically we do our ratings in a numerical fashion.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
It is the number one episode of Con so far.
You'll have to do a little better than that.
All right. Maybe a 6.
Okay. All right. What do you think could bring it up to an 8?
Maybe a little bit more radio drama effects going on.
Okay.
There was very little. It was just a bunch of talking voices.
It wasn't a lot of footsteps.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like radio dramas, they do a lot of footsteps and a lot of like opening cabinets and closing cabinets and you know what I'm saying? Put stuff down, pick stuff up, things.
Yep. I mean, we heard the communicator chirp. We heard the communicator give its dying bellows.
Bellows.
Or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Swan song. Mm-hmm. We heard the banging of the cargo container.
Yeah.
But I think that
I could use a little more soundscaping. Yeah. I think that the soundscaping was okay when Tuvok and Dr. Lear were going in, but I could have used a little bit more atmospheric stuff.
Yeah.
Sort of the rest of the time.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Like even the hearing didn't really sound like it was in that big of a room. It would have been nice to have it.
I mean,
like,
I think some of the art of radio drama, old-timey radio drama from the 1920s and 30s. Uh-huh. Is that the right era?
Sure.
You know, like I just said, been lost. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think that would maybe help bring it up to an end.
Okay. Just curious. Do you have any idea what the next episode of Star Trek Con is that we will be covering here on Let's Talk About Treks, which is a podcast
that reviews
about
podcasts.
A podcast, right? Yeah.
Next time on Let's Talk About Treks.
Boom.
I knew you were going to do something. Yeah. It's Star Trek Con, episode 2, Scheherazade. Thanks.
Yeah.
Scheherazade. Mm-hmm. As they acclimate to the beauty and promise of their new home, Khan and his people also encounter deadly dangers waiting to catch them unawares.
Brilliant. I'm looking very much forward to the next episode. Yeah. I don't know which way they're going to go. Where do you think they're going to go?
Left.
Okay, sounds great. All right. Any other thoughts about this episode before we head out of here?
No, I think that's it.
Okay, sounds good.
All right. Thank you for joining us, everybody. We appreciate your time. We appreciate you as well. Until next time.
Okay, no. Start again, because no, I'm not cutting out right in the middle of everything. Come on now.
I apologize.
It's fine.
Where was I?
Just start your goodbye stuff.
Yes.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. We really appreciate it. Thank you for listening to this podcast about a podcast. And we apologize. This is the currently airing Star Trek, so that's why we are here to talk about Treks.
Yes, all of them, and not just the video ones.
Yeah, correct. Yes.
I mean, we don't. Yes. Until next time, stay positive, dream big, and you'll hear from us again soon.
Check out some other podcasts on the Realm Network, Patreon.com. Which produced this podcast.
Let's Talk About Treks is a production of Anodyne Relay, supported by the Star Trek fan community of listeners like you. We review the copyrighted works of Paramount CBS's Star Trek team, of whom no copyright infringement is intended. You can reach us via email at email@letstalkabouttreks.com. You can leave us a message at area code 202-804-6312. Our producer is David Moody, and our writers, Jack and Earl, are on Twitter as @TrekStalkers, and would greatly appreciate the obligatory like and subscribe from wherever you're listening now. We record on Lenovo computers with Zoom, mix with NCH Mixpad, and master with Kakos Reaper. Our intro, outro, and interstitial musics feature samples from Awakening by Waterboy from Pixabay.
Well, not this podcast, that podcast.
There's also a bunch of stuff that was done by Roddenberry Podcasts.
Oh, really? Are they like informational podcasts?
They mostly
and like
might
interview-able podcasts.
Possibly, yeah.
For some reason, I often find myself disinterested in Star Trek podcasts that have guests on them that are Star Trek. I don't know why that is. I really don't. It might be Joe. Maybe it's jealousy. It could be. It's probably why I laughed like that. Anyway, I hope you have a great night.
I do as well.
Thanks for joining me. Okay. Thanks. All right. You have a good night. Cheers. Goodbye now. All right.